From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Mexico's government has asked the U.S. to launch a full investigation into the use of tear gas canisters over the weekend that Border Patrol agents lobbed over the fence into Mexico near the San Diego port of entry. On three different occasions, Trump defended the use of tear gas and blamed the refugees for their plight this past Monday.
We'll not tolerate any form of assault or attack upon our border agents like happened yesterday, or any attempt to destroy federal property, overrun federal authorities, or bring chaos and violence to American soil.
Are you comfortable tear gassing children like what we saw?
They're not. They had to use because they were being rushed by some very tough people, and they used tear gas. And here's the bottom line. Nobody's coming into our country unless they come in legally.
How did you feel when you saw the images of the women and children running from the tear gas?
Well, I do say, why are they there? I mean, I have to start off. First of all, the tear gas is a very minor form of the tear gas itself. It's very safe. The ones that were suffering to a certain extent were the people that we're putting it out there, but it's very safe. But you really say, why is a parent running up into an area where they know the tear gas is forming and it's going to be formed, and they're running up with a child? And in some cases, you know, they're not the parents. These are people, they call them grabbers. They grab a child because they think they're going to have a certain status by having a child. You know, you have certain advantages in terms of our crazy laws that, frankly, Congress should be changing. You know, if you change the laws, you wouldn't be having this problem.
That's Trump speaking on three different occasions on Monday about the use of tear gas at the border, where the refugee caravan from Central America has arrived. Images of women and barefoot children fleeing the tear gas have generated outrage. The U.S. is reported to be processing only about 100 asylum applications a day, leaving the thousands of refugees stuck in Mexico, where there have been clashes with Mexican federal police. We go now to Mexico City to speak with Laura Carlson, director of the Americas program of the Center for International Policy, a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus, and she's been closely following the refugee caravan. She's been a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Laura.
Thanks, Sonali.
So let's first talk about what exactly happened in at the border on the Mexico side near the San Diego port of entry. There's been conflicting reports about what it was that prompted the use of tear gas. Some are saying that some of those who were attempting to make it through the border rushed over. Others were saying, the Trump administration is saying, that Border Patrol agents were attacked with rocks. What, as far as you know, happened?
Well, we've been sharing information here to discover exactly how this incident occurred. And apparently what happened is that a very small part of the immigrant group, which is now over 5,000 people who are at this refugee camp in Tijuana, a very small group of a couple hundred decided to run toward the border. And they did run toward the border. They went through a Mexican police line, and they came close to the crossing with the United States, and that's when they began to confront the tear gas canisters that were lobbed over the wall. We're talking about desperate people, many women and children among this group, and there have been injuries, unfortunately, particularly being if you're hit directly with the tear gas canister, in addition to the injuries that the gas itself caused, including a colleague of mine had to have stitches because of being hit in the head with one of the canisters. It was a completely unjustified response. Again, these people do not represent any threat to national security, and they have every right under international law to present themselves in the United States and request asylum.
Now, the photographs in particular of this one woman with her two of her children have been plastered all over the news. There have been several photos of her. The girls that she's holding on to are barefoot. They're in diapers. Absolutely desperate scene. Really heartrending. She was interviewed later by some press, and she explained that she has family members in the United States. She has been traveling with her numerous children in making this incredible, arduous journey. And yet when Trump is asked about, you know, women and children like this, his response was to say that there are grabbers, women that are trafficking children across the border. Is this part of the continuous demonization we've seen from him of immigrants?
It's absolutely delusional. And essentially what he's saying is that people are using young children to create a sympathetic image. And this annoys him because he's trying to criminalize all of them. But we have no evidence whatsoever of anyone ever doing that. They brought their children because they were escaping from situations in which their children were in imminent danger, as were they in their countries of origin, mostly from Honduras, where, as we know, there's a political crisis caused in large part by U.S. policies propping up an illegitimate president, Juan Orlando Hernandez. And these people got to the point where they couldn't take it anymore. And when they found out there was a large group of immigrants going through Mexico to the United States, where they could travel without having to pay human traffickers, and with the safety that those numbers provide, they decided to join and try to find a better life. And of course, the fact that they have family members in the United States means that their families have been separated, and they've had the pain of wanting to reunite their families for many, many years as well. So to portray these parents and these children as pawns in some kind of plot against him and his effort to criminalize them and make them out to be a national security threat is beyond heartless. It's cynical, and it's a dangerous lie in this context of racism and xenophobia that's characterizing the United States, or part of the United States, these days.
Let's talk a little bit more about the tear gas. Several current and former members of Border Patrol of the Border Patrol Agency have done news reports defending the use of the tear gas and saying that it was, quite harmless. Trump himself said in the clip that we played earlier that this is not a very serious kind of a chemical. But we know that this is the same chemical is used in tests on members of the U.S. military who are basically, are made to endure the use of this tear gas so that they know what kind of weapons they may expect or that they may have to use. And the pictures are not pretty of people who are trained as soldiers having to endure this. This was a serious chemical, right?
Yes, of course it is. There's nothing innocuous about launching tear gas into a crowd. It's true that people survive it, but imagine especially the effects on a child's body. There are long-term effects that have to do with the respiratory system and other parts of the body, as well as the immediate discomfort. And then there's the risk of when you lob it over the wall, actually hitting someone in the head, which in fact did happen. So there's no excuse for this, and it's completely placing women and children at risk with no real justification whatsoever. He says that some people were hit with rocks. We don't have videos that show rock throwing at the time, although we just don't. And there was no one injured. Trump outright lied about injuries among the Border Patrol. Even Christian Nielsen had to come out and say, no, there are no injuries among Border Patrol members, although reportedly some people did get hit in the helmet or something. So, it's just this manipulation of public opinion and dehumanization of refugee and asylum seekers that is poisoning the public debate on what's happening now at the border.
Laura, what does the action of throwing these tear gas canisters across an international border mean? Mexico, we have found out earlier this week, has demanded a full investigation in a diplomatic note sent to the United States. All of this happening on the verge of incoming President Andrés Manuel López Obrador being inaugurated for his first term in office. And reports that we're hearing before that the U.S. made a deal with Mexico to keep asylum seekers in Mexico while they await the processing of their applications. So can you comment on the sort of U.S.-Mexico relationship part of the story with respect to these asylum seekers?
It's a very delicate moment. It's really another crisis in U.S.-Mexico relations. And of course, I say another because Trump periodically provokes crisis in U.S.-Mexico relations because he finds it politically expedient. It's a disaster for Mexico. At the core of this issue is the concept of national sovereignty, which is one that Donald Trump and his cabinet use frequently to justify their America First platform, but which applies to Mexico as well, in the sense that it is an attack to lob a tear gas canister over at unarmed people on the Mexican side of the border, and that the proposal also for Mexico to hold U.S. asylum seekers in the 1 to 2 years that it can take with this tremendous backlog for the United States to process their cases of persecution and imminent danger in order to seek asylum in the United States is also a violation of national sovereignty. Mexico has no reason whatsoever to do it. It's hard to say whether the new government will accept it because they have an Achilles heel, and that is the U.S. relationship. Mexico is so dependent on the United States that if there seems to be any threat to that relationship, there's this huge response in international markets especially. We saw it yesterday when Trump tweeted that he could permanently close the border. The stock market crashed here in Mexico. The peso fell. There was a tremendous response on the part of international markets, which have been a little bit jittery about the inauguration of the new president in the next few days as well. So he's holding a tremendous amount of leverage over an entire population, over an entire nation, and the incoming president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, will have to figure out how to deal with it. It's a difficult challenge indeed.
Right. I mean, it's interesting because we've been hearing Trump boast about his wonderful relationship with AMLO and just repeated assertions that he has established this good friendship. But Obrador is considered left of center, considered to be pro people, pro poor. At least that's how he casts himself. And Trump is quite the opposite. And it's hard to imagine, especially after Enrique Peña Nieto, the current and outgoing president of Mexico, whose politics, are certainly a little bit closer to Trump's than Obrador's. That relationship was quite tense, quite caustic. It's hard to imagine that a Trump-Obrador relationship could actually be positive unless Obrador completely undermines his own stated principles and ideals.
Well, that's a really good point, Sonali. I think what he's going to have to try to do is search for a way to create alternative, to create Mexico's own policies, to distance himself from the white supremacist government of Donald Trump, which obviously is not in the interest of the Mexican people that he will now rule. And at the same time, he's going to have to look for ways to do that without provoking an outright confrontation. And actually, there are ways to do that. He will have significant allies in the rest of the international community because there's almost a unanimous rejection of Donald Trump and his white supremacist agenda within the international community and other countries. So one of the ways will be to strengthen the alliances and the relationships with other countries. Another will be to look inward, to fortify Mexico, to say you're responsible to the United States, for example, on this immigration issue, to say, look, you respect our national sovereignty. We respect your national sovereignty. We're not going to get involved in your asylum and immigration affairs. If you need to process asylum applications, you need to do that yourself. And just begin to make changes within Mexican policies that offer another path of receiving people, of not dehumanizing and criminalizing refugees, that offer an example to the world that parts ways with the Trump administration without actually confronting it.
Laura, what is the situation inside Mexico right now in Tijuana with the refugees? I understand that there's been sort of makeshift camps set up and there have been clashes with Mexican police. So what's the conditions under which the refugees are living right now as they wait, being able to process their asylum applications? And do the Mexican police have a mandate to attack them or secure the area? What exactly are the police doing?
Well, so far the police and part of the armed forces are actually helping out for the most part. There have been some deportations. There have been the attack came when they physically, that small group physically tried to break through the Mexican police barrier. But the situation in the refugee camps in Tijuana is very, very precarious, to say the least. The latest report shows between 5,000 and 6,000 people who are pretty much stuck there. Most of them have applied for asylum in the United States, but the United States is only accepting processing of 100 applications a day. So that means that the wait could be extremely long. And in any case, there's a huge backlog of hundreds of thousands of applications for asylum in the United States. And the wait, although it's supposed to be 180 days, has been between 1 and 2 years up to now. If the numbers increase like they are right now, then that's obviously going to increase as well. So they're running into shortages of food. The hygiene conditions are deteriorating. There isn't sufficient housing, obviously. They're really, the Mexican government is attempting to create a jobs fair and look for ways that these people can be integrated into Mexican society. They're offering people the option of asylum in Mexico rather than in the United States. But again, as you said at the beginning, as so many of them have family members in the United States, and they still have, it's funny for us, but they still have this idea of the American dream, despite what they're seeing in terms of the reality at the border, that somehow there's a place for them, a safe place where they can be with their families, and they think it's there.
Do you find, or have you heard any reports that some of the folks seeing what's been transpiring at the border are turning back or choosing to try to make a life in Mexico?
Yes, definitely. The numbers with this caravan from the beginning, since there was a concerted attempt on the part of the Mexican government to convince people to stay at Mexico, and now there's a new program called Stay in Mexico, that some people have opted for that alternative. The problem is that there's a backlog in Mexico asylum petitions. There's not a high rate of approval either. And there's some problems with the law, like you can't work while you're waiting. You can't go out of the state in which you request it. So they're kind of frozen there without any options when they apply. And so there would have to be some changes for them to accept that option. There are also like permanent presence of Mexican authorities to take people back to Central America, to Honduras, principally, if they decide to do that. But again, the problem is that if they decide to do that, for one thing, all of their travails in the migrant caravans since leaving Honduras over a month ago would have been for nothing, and they'd be going back to situations that they were trying to escape from in the first place, where many of them could be in imminent physical danger. So you find a situation where the refugees and the migrants have no good options. Civil society is trying to provide at least better food and housing conditions there in Tijuana as things begin to sort out. But for example, if you think, and it's not just an example, but it's one of the main arguments, what it costs for Donald Trump to deploy soldiers to the U.S. border as he did as an electoral stunt, basically, what it costs to do that compared to what it would cost to just get additional asylum agents on the job so they could process these applications as should be done under international law. And yet that's not even on the table.
Right. We heard that it cost $200 million to deploy all the troops to the border ahead of his pre-election stunt.
Huge waste of money. And the American taxpayers know that. You know, they know that, but the debate has become so confused. And this argument that somehow desperate people just trying to find a safe place to be with their children are a national security threat, it still resonates at least with Donald Trump's base. And that's what he really cares about. So now he doesn't really have much of a chance to get funding for the wall, but he's going to use this to the hilt. Now that the midterms are over, you know, to press for funding for the wall, to keep pushing forward with the Trump, Stephen Miller, white supremacist agenda. And meanwhile, there's this tremendous human suffering going on that nobody's really thinking about how to solve.
And I'm wondering if you can give us some details about the support that you mentioned has sprung up in Tijuana for those Americans on this side of the border, very upset about the images of tear gas and the desperate conditions that these refugees are being forced to wait in. Are there ways that they can help, say, financially support some efforts inside Tijuana?
Yes, there definitely are. There are online some organizations, especially shelters, mm-hmm. that are asking for donations. I don't have those on hand, but I think you can find those looking them up. The shelters that exist there will be maxed out, are maxed out, and need help absorbing the numbers, because you also have to remember that there were already like over 2,000 refugees, asylum seekers stuck in Tijuana before this huge group arrived, mostly Haitians and Africans. Mm-hmm. And so now the numbers are burgeoning very quickly. So they can find that online. There's been a lot of support from the U.S. community and concern about what's happening. It could be a great opportunity for us to look for new ways to organize binationally in support of a different paradigm for handling immigration flows and refugee and asylum seekers, a humanitarian paradigm to confront this Trump image of criminalization. We have to continue to look for ways of doing this. In Mexico, you know, we do have this xenophobic and racist reaction in Tijuana of the mayor and of a part of the population. And we've seen some of it in Mexico on social media. But on the other hand, and if you ask the migrants, and I have, you know, what they saw in Mexico, they will speak in very grateful terms about the response of the Mexican people. Mexico, and including the Mexico City government, when they were here in Mexico City, you know, has shown a different way of treating refugees, of welcoming refugees and assuring that they have the basic needs. That's what, in many cases, they were lacking when they were forced to leave their homes. So we have all the tools to create a different model for dealing with this, which is, of course, a global phenomenon. What we're seeing here is not something that's specific to this region. It's not something that just happened over the past month. The numbers have been coming in like this pretty consistently for a long time now because of what's happening in Central America. And the difference is that people began to travel in these large groups because it's just plain safer for them.
Right. Laura, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us. The story is going to keep developing, given how slowly the Trump administration is processing the asylum application. So we'll certainly be covering it again. Thank you, as always, for joining us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Laura Carlson. She's the director of the Americas Program of the Center for International Policy and a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus, speaking to us from Mexico City, where she's been closely following the Central American refugee caravan. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.